Savitri, Book 3, Canto 3. Now we begin the satsang session of 9th May 1985.
Draupadi is standing. Ashwapati, as I said, is standing on the highest line of the world, and a splendor and a symbol wrapped the earth, a splendor from above, a radiance and a symbol. Something envelops the earth, and that something signifies something else. It is a symbol. And both the splendor and the symbol cover the earth. Serene Epiphanes looked and hallowed vasts, sacred vastitudes. Epiphany applies to new manifestations, new revelations, serene new sights looked at him, and hallowed vasts surrounded, wise infinitudes were close. The infinitudes, the infinities were not neutral, not indifferent, but wise. They were exuding wisdom, and they were near, and yet, and bright remotenesses leaned near and keen. What were so far, remotenesses, distances, bright as they were, they leaned, bent near where he was, and kin related themselves to him. Sense failed in that tremendous lucency, in that brilliant light, that high charge of electricity, as it were. Senses which function at a certain gross level, they failed. Ephemeral voices from his hearing fell. Ephemeral, transitory, temporary voices of the earth, they fell away from his hearing, and thought potent no more sank large and pale. Thought had lost its force, and having lost its potency, it just sank in its full largeness, and it was pale, like a tired god into mysterious seas. We come across this imagery in many places in Sri Aurobindo's poetic literature, like a tired god into mysterious seas. That this god is swimming, is playing into a mysterious sea, sea of mystery, superconscious, and he is tired, and he just sinks, he just goes down. Like a tired god into mysterious seas. Gods sink into the mysterious seas. I remember an occasion when one of the disciples, it was more than 20-25 years ago, he had been to swimming, but he didn't return to the playground for the group activity that he was expected to join. So they waited, and then mother was informed. Search parties went there, but nobody could trace what had happened. And next day, I believe, mother described how that same night she saw the sea god coming up from the sea and carrying in his hands the soul of that devotee who had, you know, died by losing his depths, I believe. But she described how the sea god slowly emerged, carrying his soul and giving it to her. So, though in poetry we hear of gods sinking into the sea, in life there are occasions when gods rise from the sea. Next, the robes of mortal thinking were cast down, leaving his knowledge bare to absolute sight. The normal way of thinking of the human mind acts like a cover, like a coating on pure knowledge. They obscure, the mind's ways obscure the knowledge. But here, they are just cast down so that knowledge, the object of the mental seeking, is laid bare to absolute sight, to sight which is not dependent on any mental faculty. Fate's driving ceased. He is no more subject to the drive of fate, to the compulsions of fate, and nature's sleepless purr. All who are subject to the rule of nature are constantly spurred, go ahead, go forward. Nature doesn't allow us to stay put. But with him, nature's incessant spur ceased, and the athletic heavings of the will were stilled in the omnipotent, unmoving peace. The will, his will, was so strong that whenever it functioned, it was like an athlete heaving hard. But these heavings, movements up and down, were stilled in the unmoving peace, undisturbable peace of the omnipotent divine. life in his members, lay down vast and mute. The life energy coursing through his limbs, lay down mute, dumb, vast, not limited anymore, naked, unwalled, unterrified, it bore the immense regard of immortality. Life bore, life that lay down mute, was naked, was not covered by moments of desire or passion or struggle, unborn, no more limited to his physical frame, unterrified, it had no fear, no nervousness, and it bore the immense regard of immortality. Normally, the immense regard of immortality scares, terrifies the limited life in a physical body, because it is always afraid of being swallowed up. It tends to guard itself. But here it had no coverings, it had no compound walls, it had no fear. And so it was able to face directly the immense regard of immortality. The last moment died. The faintest movement came to a stop, and all at once grew still. Everything became silent, unmoving, and a weight that was the unseen transcendence hand laid on his limbs, the spirit's measureless seed. His limbs, which were so exposed to the regard of immortality, they felt a pressure, a weight, and that was the hand of the unseen transcendent. Transcendent is what exceeds the universal or the cosmic manifestation. And that weight was that transcendent's hand laid on his limbs, the spirit's measureless seal. It is a seal, chapa, of the spirit, divine consciousness, measureless, it cannot be limited, it cannot be defined, and that was laid on his limbs, so that the sanction of the Supreme Spirit was confirmed, and infinity swallowed him into shoreless trance. He was swallowed up into a condition of trance without borders, without bounds, into infinity. Because it is not possible to go into that naked infinity in normal waking condition. At any rate, for Ashwapati in that state. So he goes into a trance condition and gets swallowed up in that infinity. As one who sets his sail towards mysteried shores, this is an imagery. There is a huge ocean and the shores of the ocean are lost in mystery. And he sets out, like someone who sets out in a boat, setting his sail direction towards the mysteried shores. And how does he go? How does the boat go? Not by steam power, not by motor power, driven through huge oceans by the breath of God. That is an ocean of the superconscient. And the breath of God is enough motive power to push the ship towards its destined shores. And as he sets out, below, the fathomless below, below him, it is all fathomless. He cannot determine how deep it is. And the unknown around him is an unknown territory. Below him are unfathomable depths. In that condition, his soul abandoned the blind star field space. That is, he broke across space. Space is the field of stars. That is why he calls it the star field. Blind, it is not really seeing. That is why he calls blind. Space does not have the consciousness that sees. And such a space he abandons behind him. Afar from all that makes the measured world. Our world is a measured world. In various ways, man has determined its limits, its height, in every dimension. That is what makes it a measured world, as distinct from the measureless infinity. Afar from all that makes the measured world, plunging into hidden eternities, it withdrew, his soul withdrew back from the mind's foaming surface. The mind is compared to a foam, the ocean of the soul, of which the foam surface is the mind. Back from mind's foaming surface to the wasps, voiceless within us. Wasps, always we think they are outside of us. But here he says, the wasps, voiceless within us, in omniscient sleep, in that omniscient sleep condition, that is, the superconscious sleep. These wasps are experience, voiceless, silent. They are not outside but inside us. His soul withdrew to those vasts within, afar from the measureless world, outside of space. Above the imperfect reach of word and thought, even in their highest reaches, thought and word can scale only an imperfect state of existence. They cannot go beyond a certain height. It is repeatedly told in the Upanishad how speech and thought speech and mind fall back from Brahman without reaching it. They cannot cross the vasts. So Ashwapati's soul, above the imperfect reach of word and thought, beyond the sight, the last support of form, seeing, the act of seeing. When you see a form, however large a form, but a form. And so he says, it is the last support of form. However much you may reduce the physical dimensions of form, as long as you can see something, the last support for form to exist is there. So, even beyond that sight, he goes lost in the deep, in deep tracts of superconscient light, or voyaging in blank, featureless nothingness. If it is not the superconscient light, he journeys in nothingness, in a state of nothingness, which is blank and featureless, we cannot characterize. Soul alone in the trackless, where there is no path, incommensurable, what cannot be measured or past. Not self and self and selflessness. That is, the notion of the self and not self, the self and selflessness, that itself disappears. The concept, the idea of self and what is not self, completely disappears in that state. Transgressing the dream shores of conscious mind. The conscious mind dreams of many vasts, many infinitudes. But even those he transgresses, he reached at last his sempiternal base, his original, most ancient base, foundation. He reaches at last. On sorrowless heights, low winging cry disturbs. There are heights, altitudes, where there is no sorrow, where no cry from below, the sorrowful world can reach and disturb. Winging, the cry is like a sound which goes, shoots up, or like a bird that wings its way. Those heights cannot be disturbed by a winging cry. Pure and untouched above the mortal plane. The mortal play means existence, lila. On those heights is spread the spirit's hush, immobile air. On those sorrowless heights, the hush, the silence, unmoving air of the spirit, pure air of the spirit pervades, is spread out. There no beginning is, and there no end. When we say there is no beginning or end, it does not relate to our earth, but there is a height above where you cannot speak, you cannot conceive of a beginning or an end. There is the stable force of all that moves. the stability on which everything moves, and stability which provides the power for every moment, it is there. There the aeonic laborer is at rest. Aeonic, who has been working across the ages, the demiurge, the creator of the world, you can say the creative God, is at last at rest. That because there turns no keyed creation in the void. Keyed creation, a creation like a machine, it has been given, wound, the key has been wound, and the creation goes. Now such a creation is no more turning there. There turns no keyed creation in the void, no giant mechanism watched by a soul. It is here, the huge mechanism of the world, universe, goes on because it has been wound up, wound, but watched by the soul. The soul, the self, is not lost in it. It is watching. But there is no self to watch and no keyed creation to be watched. There creaks no fate-turned huge machinery. Unlike here, there is not that huge machinery which creaks, means makes noise, functioning indifferently. Fate turned. Fate is the mechanism that turns the entire machinery. But it is no longer there. There also, the marriage of evil with good within one's breast, that too is not there. In each one's breast, evil and good are inseparably thrown together. The clash of strife in the very clasp of love. These are conditions at our level of existence. Even in the clasp of love, there is some strife inside. All is not love. Behind the facade of love, there is a strife of will. There is a strife of claims. So he says, the clash of strife in the very clasp of love, the dangerous pain of life's experiment. Life is experimenting here, and inevitably there is dangerous pain. But what is that experiment? In the values of inconsequence and chance that life plays with inconsequence, practically no results worth the while, and chance. With that life gambles. The peril of mind's gamble, and the shadow and shadows of the idea. Each idea throws its own shadow, falling upon the surface consciousness. Each idea, as I said, throws its shadow on the surface consciousness of the mind. These are all descriptions of the experiment of life. And in the dream of a mute witness soul, the soul as related to the world is a mute witness, uninterfering. And in his dream, life creates the error of a half-seen world. We never see it whole. We see only one side of it. That is why he says the error of a half-seen world, where knowledge is a seeking ignorance. In this life world created by life, our knowledge is really an ignorance, seeking to know. Life steps a stumbling series without suit. That is, the steps of life are stumbling. They are not regulated, well-laid steps leading somewhere, but stumbling series without suit, without a goal, without a destination. Its aspect of fortuitous design, life as an aspect of an accidental design. Its equal measure of the true and false, in that all these aspects of life, all these qualities of life, find no access, don't find entry in that immobile and immutable realm where Ashwapati has been elevated, find no access, no cause, no right to live. There only reigns the spirit's motionless power, poised in itself through still eternity, and its omniscient and omnipotent peace. In that realm, where all these uneven movements of life do not have an entry, there is only that motionless power of the spirit, poised in itself, well aware, self-poised. It is not subject to time. It is still through eternity, and its omniscient and omnipotent peace. It is poised in that state of peace which is omniscient, all-knowing, and omnipotent, all-powerful.
Here ends the satsang session of 9th May 1985.